Good morning, everybody. Matt Fubile here with you, 720 WGN. Hello, Roger Badish. What's going on, buddy?
Not much, Mr. Matt Fubile. Everything's fine. By you?
Everything's peachy keen.
Ooh.
Peachy and keen.
Peachy and keen. Yeah. That's nice.
Yeah, that's a good combination.
Yeah. Peach is good this time of year. I had a mango peach yogurt the other day. Delicious.
All right. Well, good. I'm very happy to hear that.
So baseball is done for the year now?
Baseball is done.
All right.
We're taking a couple of weeks completely off from baseball, although it's very nice. The little towns that all our boys come from have been honoring us. We went to Gilbert's, Illinois, neighboring town where they had a council meeting, and they brought our two state championship teams. And I failed to mention, I think, recently, our softball majors girls, 11 and 12-year-old, I believe, they finished third in state.
Hey.
So it was a very successful season.
Great.
So, they honored all three of our teams. That was a lot of fun. And now we're watching a lot of Little League World Series on ESPN because that started on Thursday.
Yeah.
The 12-year-old levels, they're all in Williamsport, the eight international teams and eight American teams vying for the Little League World Series.
I just saw a little bit on, I think it was ESPN, the first combined no-hitter.
Oh, really?
In Little League history.
Wow.
By an American team. I forgot what the... where they were from, but three pitchers combined.
Wow.
They were wicked. One guy took a swing, went flying up in the air, and landed on his back.
Seriously?
Seriously.
Kids can throw the curveballs.
Oh, that's man.
Sure.
Just some wicked pitching for 13-year-olds. Are you kidding me?
Yep, and you know, it tends to be that you'll see some teams here at the Little League World Series where there's that one kid who hit puberty really hard, and he's 6'2".
Yeah.
You know, and throws 75 miles an hour from a 46-foot mound, which makes it seem like it's there before he lets go of it. But it's very fun. It's a fun time of year.
Yeah.
Jack, our junior now in high school, started school this week, and the triplets don't go back. They start sixth grade next week. So we've got our last few days that we're trying to figure out what are we doing with the world and what are we doing with everyone and where are we taking them. And like I was telling Patty, I'm trying to figure out what to do about Monday. I don't want to stay here. Because we're not in the path of totality.
Well, it's not going to be totally totality.
This is my favorite saying in the world, though, Roger. Totality. I love saying path of totality. You know, it's
doomsday
like when your wife is mad at you. Ooh, boy, guys.
Yeah, right.
Better stay out of the path of totality on that one. That's trouble coming. Oh, mom's upset. Stay out of the path of totality. You know? I mean,
I know.
I think wherever the tornado goes next time,
there's
a bunch of broken stuff, but then there's the path of totality. When you see that aerial shot of, you know, the houses that got knocked down and everything else, that's the path of totality.
Yeah, I like that. We're going to use it until nobody wants to use it anymore.
Yeah, we get through till five.
Okay.
Colleen and I went and saw Dunkirk tonight.
Great movie, huh?
It was a good movie.
Yeah, yeah. Not like... oh my God, greatest movie in the world.
Nope.
But it was so well acted.
You did go see it.
Well shot. Oh yeah, we saw it a couple of weeks ago. Well shot. I love the storytelling was a little unusual. It took me a second or two to figure out what was going on.
Yeah, so it's sort of like three acts.
Yeah.
It's a little Pulp Fiction-ish.
But they overlap.
They overlap, but there are different times, and then you're seeing things that you saw happen.
Mm-hmm.
So once you get used to, okay, here's what's going on here, then it gets a little easier.
So it took you a little while to figure it out at times?
I was having trouble, and then Colleen leaned over and said, I read that there's like three separate stories.
Yeah.
And so then, because at the beginning, there's a scene where you think it's all happening at the same time.
Right.
And then... one scene keeps being during the day and one is at night. And I'm like, wait, now I thought for one scene, oh, they screwed that up.
Yeah.
And then you kept seeing it like, all right, now these are different times. This is not at the same time.
Yeah. Very well done. I'm always put off a bit from movies where there are stars in the movie, but they're not promoted as being the star of the movie.
Okay.
So, in the latest Guardians of the Galaxy, seeing Rocky as a Ravager in the movie kind of threw me off. I'm like, why? Just so he could be in the movie? I can't stand that. There's several.
You're talking about Sylvester Stallone?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, is he in that? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's. Sorry.
No, that's
it,
okay.
It ruined a good movie for me. But there's.
Because it took you out of.
Yeah.
Really?
Exactly. Exactly. There's been other movies like that now. It happened in Dunkirk, but there's something about British films where you can see it. A star that you know, it's like, hey, I know him. He's in, I remember him from so-and-so. But with this, it's like, oh, yeah, he's in it. And then, boom, you forget it.
Yeah,
I don't know what it is about British films. And Bridget and I love British television.
Mm-hmm.
So we have seen a ton of it in our lives. And so we recognize a lot of these actors and actresses from these TV shows.
That's
interesting. And so, it doesn't take us out of the movie, but this time it took me out for a second or two.
Well, this movie was made by Christopher Nolan, who made Inception and the Batman, the original Batman trilogy. Well, not the original Batman trilogy,
right.
The Christian Bale Batman trilogy. And so who threw you off? Because it's interesting, like I recognized a bunch of people from other Christopher Nolan movies.
Well, I don't know. He wasn't in...
But are you talking about
he wasn't in
the
other
gentleman who was sailing the boat?
Because no, none of the people in the boat.
None
of the people in the boat threw me off, even though that was a great that story was just really riveting. Let's see here. The guy in charge, Kenneth Branagh.
Kenneth Branagh, that threw you off?
Yeah. Because it had him, he just stood there. you understand
what I'm saying?
Well,
there wasn't much they could do.
And he had the British resolve. Yeah, but, and you know, there was a lot of standing around in Dunkirk.
Well, there was, because they needed ships. So basically,
right.
We're in France.
Yeah.
And there's 400,000 British and French soldiers. And maybe others, trapped on this beach because the Germans have fought them off. They're not able to retake any of France. They got to get out of there, but they're not bringing destroyers over anymore because the Germans are bombing them from the sky.
Right.
And England is worried that they need their ships for when the Germans come for them.
Right. So they're guns leaving. On land, German guns that are firing into the ocean. Or into the strait, basically. And then there are German planes flying overhead, bombing and strafing. So there are often, like the movie shows, a couple of tankers filled with English soldiers who have finally gotten off the beach, and the Germans come in.
Yeah, it doesn't go so well.
Very harrowing stuff. I mean, and this movie has been made before, not this specific one.
Oh, really?
But, there's an earlier one from, I think, the 50s of the Dunkirk situation, the battle. And but this one, it just that the way they weave those three stories in and out was just really grabbed me. About maybe a third of the way into it, and it just I wanted to keep seeing. All right, what's going to happen now, or what happened to this person, or oh my God, that's it. Just really makes you want to stay with it, and the end of the movie was not a jump up and cheer necessarily kind of outcome,
right?
But it was a very satisfying outcome. Now, unfortunately, I don't know who you saw with. I didn't see it in 3D or 4D or 10D or whatever that was.
I don't even know if this one is in 3D.
It is. There's,
sure?
Or it's an IMAX.
It's an IMAX. Yeah.
IMAX, sorry.
I was going to ask you about that. No, we saw it in regular.
Yeah,
in
and we did too, and
film.
There were three other people in the theater.
There were about five others today.
Yeah, see? I don't get it.
Well, it's been out for a while, hasn't
well,
it, now?
Yeah, but.
And it's not, you know. It's not a Spider-Man movie or something like that. But here's the thing. Michael Phillips wrote a lengthy article in the Tribune about how you should view this movie, if possible.
Oh, really?
So I guess, and I didn't realize this, there are varying types of IMAX.
Huh?
And 70-millimeter IMAX, from what I read, is like the grand poobah of the IMAX. And there are only, I don't know if there are none in Chicago. Well, because I want
to There's an IMAX at Navy Pier.
Well, there's IMAXes everywhere. Like at every theater now, there's IMAX.
I got it.
But 70mm IMAX has to be an insanely large screen, I believe. And I thought the one at Navy Pier is being rebuilt and isn't open till like the fall or something.
Oh, really?
Like I thought I read that because Michael Phillips wrote this whole thing about, here's the thing, if you're going to see this, you should see it the right way. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to do that here in Chicago right now. In other cities, they can see this how it's truly meant to be made. And Michael was saying, get to the absolute biggest IMAX you can to see this, because he said it does make a difference.
Because there
are those sweeping aerial shots.
Oh, there are. Oh, my gosh. Tons of them from the ground and from the sky and from the sea.
Yeah.
Just tremendous vista shots.
Yeah. It was a good film. It was good. Fun. But you're right. It's not when you walk away going, ah, yeah.
Right.
Like, oh, man.
Right. It's because, one, you already know this is a factual event.
Right.
You already know what the outcome is. I'll tell you my one disappointment. Thinking I knew more about it before I went to see it than I actually did know.
Right.
I thought, from what I heard, that there would be like maybe three times as many boats
coming
over. But then when I was done watching it, because they didn't address this in the movie, I went back and looked up a little more information. Those boats made like three or four trips.
Oh, from Dunkirk and
back. To go back and forth.
Wow.
Very interesting.
I do want to read more about it now. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about it later in the show. I want to find a little bit about it because it does sound like an amazing part. And it happened in 40. So we weren't even in the war yet.
No.
The war was going
No, the U.S.
badly.
Was not in the war. And this was a British operation, and they covered this in the movie. But you said the French were also trying to get off because, you know, in France.
Well, they were trapped there, too.
Right, they were trapped there, too, but they would only take the British soldiers first.
Yeah, because they felt they had to get their army back home so they could fight the battle there where it would be headed next.
Yeah, and very, very interesting how it all came about, and the individual stories were just heart-rending.
Yeah, it was an interesting film, to say the least.
Yeah.
312-981-7200. If to the news, Glenn wants to talk about another World War II movie. And are there what are the top one or two World War II movies you should see? 312-981-7200. I know Rog will have a few to give to us after he checks the news headlines. Roger. Good morning, everybody. Matt Bubala with you on 720 WGN. Thanks very much for hanging up even later with us. Hope you're having a good weekend. Good start to your weekend. Good weather for the whole weekend, right, Raj?
Yeah, not bad. We're not supposed to see any rain in the forecast until Monday afternoon.
Excellent. Yep. Glad to hear that.
Yep.
Glenn has been holding on patiently on 720 WGN. Hey, Glenn.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Not bad. You know, it just dawned on me. I was listening to you guys talking about the movie Dunkirk. If you ever get a chance, and anyone over 40 has watched it, Mrs. Minifort, and it's Greer Garson and Walter Pidgeon, and they touched on the fact, it showed the life of people in England what they went through during the war, and it just touched on the fact a little bit of the flotilla of boats that went across the English Channel to get all these soldiers in the middle of the night and brought them back to England. That's how a lot of these guys were saved. Anyone with a boat went across to bring these soldiers back. Otherwise, a lot of them would have been killed. It's a good movie to begin with, but I just thought I'd bring that up. It just touched on that fact. That
Mrs. Miniver.
Yeah, like you said, anyone's over 40 has watched it, and it's an excellent movie to begin with. And it just touched on it a little bit, but it just, on that fact that it was just, you know, local people with their small boats that went across to get these soldiers.
Yeah, well, that's a big part of the Dunkirk movie. That's one of the main storylines, is how the civilian patrol has been called out to try and help rescue these boys that are trapped. Glenn, thank you very much for the call. Have a good weekend. Raj, by the way, the gentleman who, I don't know his name, who starts out, who's the main character on the civilian boat that comes across. He's an actor who I don't feel like we've seen a ton of over the years. He was in Bridge of Spies.
Oh, yeah. Did you great see movie. That? Yeah.
Yeah. He was excellent movie. He was the spy, right? That Tom Hanks is going to negotiate the release of. Or he's the Russian spy.
Yeah.
It's a Cold War movie.
It's been several years since I've seen it, yeah.
Yeah, it came out in 2015, so it hasn't been that long.
Well, it seems, to me, it's...
it seems like long ago.
Yeah,
huh?
life is, when you've been around this many years, things happened a long time ago.
Mark Rylance is the name of the gentleman who was in Bridge of Spies and is also in Dunkirk, is very good in Dunkirk. That's... a favorite movie of mine, even though that's not a World War II movie. I guess if I had to pick a World War II movie, I would probably go with, and even though it was an HBO, but Saving Private Ryan.
Oh, so you're going for a newer one. Okay.
I don't have as deep of a catalog here going to have to refer to.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Mrs. Miniver. I haven't seen the movies that you tell us to see now and again about World War II. What would your film be?
Well, it's one that I came walking out of the theater from. I saw this at the Valencia Theater, which is long since gone from downtown Evanston, and I came walking out like I was a soldier. I was a young kid when it came out, and I actually felt so imbued with patriotism and joy so much positiveness. From the movie that I literally felt like I was marching and with other soldiers and stuff. It was a weird feeling. That movies sometimes move me like that.
Sure.
I kind of felt the same way. Now I forgot the movie, but another one that I, Academy Award winner, actually. I'll get to that later. This was The Longest Day, which had every male actor on the international and American scene in it. The Longest Day. It had John Wayne in it. The list went from older actors to younger actors in it. It didn't just do older actors, right? So, I want to make sure I get all of the, no, I don't want that. I want to make sure. Daryl F. Zanuck was the director. It came from a book by Cornelius Ryan, and won the Academy Award for Best Visual Effects. Let's see. Longest Day. I don't want that. I want this. Okay. Here we go. John Wayne, Robert Ryan, Richard Burton was in it. Paul Anka, Richard Boehmer, who was in West Side Story, the movie.
Richard Boehmer was in Twin Peaks, I believe.
The original? Oh, the current one?
I think so, both. I think he plays Jerry Horn.
Wow. Red Buttons, Sean Connery, Fabian, Mel Frere.
Fabian
was in this.
Fabian and Paul Anka. This didn't become a beach blanket bingo at some point.
Henry Fonda, Steve Force, Gert Frobe, Goldfinger. Let's see here. Jeffrey Hunter, Kurt Juergens, Peter Lawford. Roddy McDowell, Sal Mineo, Robert Mitchum, Edmund O'Brien, Robert Ryan, Tommy Sands, George Siegel, Rod Steiger, Tom Tryon, Robert Wagner, Stuart Whitman. All of these stars and many others were in this because it was the story of D-Day. And the invasion of Normandy Beach, and it showed all the different beaches and what was happening on each one. And so you have to have actors who can play all the different nationalities. So you had a Scottish group, you had the English group, you had the Irish group, you had the Americans, you had the Germans, you had the Russian. So it was all these different actors that they brought in for this thing. It was tremendous how they actually used Normandy Beach. They actually took all the ships. Yeah, they reenacted the entire thing along Normandy. It was a great movie. Still is a great movie. If you get a chance, it's called The Longest Day, and it's got another whistling theme song, kind of like The Bridge on the River Kwai.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got another whistling theme song. They sing the lyrics, but pretty much it's them, the singers whistling. Red Buttons parachutes in to a town that they need to take, a French town, and his chute gets caught on the steeple tower of a church, and they're ringing the bells in the tower because a fire has broken out in the town. And there's German troops that have been called out, so there was no element of surprise. And the German troops were waiting for the parachuters.
Hmm.
And he actually survived, but was deaf because he was right next to the bells and it took forever for him to get cut down.
Jeez. Oh,
yeah, that's just one of the things. It just a tremendous movie, very factual. And very moving. It shows the decision-making process of when they finally made the call to do the invasion. It had to do a lot with weather.
Man.
But, yeah, just a great movie. Longest Day.
Interesting. Longest Day. Okay. Mm-hmm. Jess was mentioning that she, well, this is not a World War II movie, but American Sniper. I never saw that. That was good, Jess?
I really liked it.
Yeah. Jess was also saying she wanted to see Hacksaw Ridge. Did you see that yet?
Yes. Oh, great movie. Yes, yes, yes.
It's on cable right now. If you have HBO, it's for free through HBO. And so we just watched it finally last week. And it's funny because when I saw the trailers, I thought, and then Dean gave it such a glowing review when it came out. And I thought, oh, God, this looks so dumb.
I hadn't heard his review. And I started to watch it because, again, on Amazon Prime, so it was one of those free ones for a while. And I started watching and I'd kind of seen the previews a little bit. Previews didn't set you up the right way for it. They cheated you. So I'm watching the beginning part, and I'm like, God, this is just really bad acting, bad this, bad that. Then you start getting into the good stuff.
Yeah.
And by the end of the movie, you're like shaking.
Yeah. Andrew Garfield, right,
is
the main character.
Well, he was nominated for an Academy Award, yeah.
His accent the first 5 minutes of the film threw me for a loop. And
really?
I started laughing like this is an SNL skit. The first few minutes, I'm like, but then the story was really good, and the whole, it ended up being a really, really good film. I was stuck.
Yeah, it was an excellent film.
Really good role for Vince Vaughn, who is so hit or miss, I feel like, in the last decade of his career.
Yeah, his choices have kind of
been a little odd.
Yeah.
But he did a really nice job, too, I thought. It was a good film.
Yeah, very good. And then we did on Patty's show, we did a little skit. What's this from?
I heard it tonight.
Yes.
And I got to say, I appreciated not knowing what the movie was in the first 5 seconds. Because generally, when you guys do them, it's from a very popular movie.
Right.
And there's a name of a character that immediately gives it away.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that I'm like, I knew because she had said at the beginning it was from you. So I knew that it was going to be a little bit tougher. And I love that, like, I didn't know what it was.
Yeah, that's another great movie, Stalag 17. Very, very good movie. Great acting. Great acting it takes place in one of the barracks of the prisoner of war camp.
Mm-hmm.
And all the intricacies, and there's a Nazi plant, a spy amongst them.
Mm.
And they try some escapes and they don't go over well because obviously the guy's telling on them.
Yeah.
And the way that they find out how the messages are getting out and who it was, it's just really... William Holden is the star, but the guy who led the Impossible Mission Force after the first season, I forgot what his name is, he's one of the actors in it too. So, yeah, another good movie, Stalag 17. A lot of great older war movies that were really, really good. Some of the newer ones are more graphic. Like you say, Saving Private Ryan. A lot of them are much more graphic because I think people's levels of tolerance are greater now.
I think there's that. I think technically they're able to do things much more easily than they used to. But what I appreciated about Saving Private Ryan is the first 10 minutes of the film, when it's D-Day, is so intense.
Yeah.
It gives you the horror of war in a way that I had not seen on film before.
Yeah.
When I was first watching that, I was like, this is hard to watch. The sound, the visuals, it's very difficult to get through the first 10 or 15 minutes, I feel like, of Saving Private Ryan. Those battle scenes are so intense, so like nothing I had ever seen before. And I think that's important. I think that we lose, when we see these films, the reality. And in this video game era where everything, we're so detached from the reality of it.
Yeah.
And we're so far from a great war like that with so many boots on the ground. I know that we're fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan and where soldiers are getting killed and getting hurt all the time. But never as a country since probably Vietnam have we been so heavily involved from day to day in what's been going on in a combat like that, right?
And even Vietnam was delayed by several days as far as getting videotape film out of there onto American TVs to where we saw what was going on almost, well, in those days, instantaneously.
Yeah.
But even that, there is a slight disconnect on that because, one, it was never an officially declared war. And two, because of that, and several other reasons, that was a big one, is that the soldiers coming back from Vietnam faced more disdain by a lot of Americans for having been involved over there. It just, a lot of vets from Vietnam were just not accepted back in to the main lifestyle here in America because it was not a combined effort like World War II was, or World War I, or the Korean War, where it was an officially declared war and everybody in the United States, from the president on down, it was open, you were enlisted, you were working towards the war effort, and everyone was involved in it. And Vietnam just wasn't on that level. As far as people's state of mind here in America. So it had a different effect. So when you're saying something like Saving Private Ryan shows the true nature of it, again, it's hard to get more involved than a two-dimensional screen if you've never been involved.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really good. All right, we got a couple of calls of people that wanted to pitch in as well. Patrick, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing? Great topic.
Good. Excellent. What do you have to add for us, bud?
Actually, it's amazing that you mentioned Stalag 17 because, you know, Patty does a segment called What's That From?
Yeah, well, Roger was on that. That's why we're talking about it. Roger just did that with her earlier tonight. Yeah.
They acted out a scene from that. I had mentioned, there's a couple I had. Of course, Saving Private Ryan is up there. I saw it in the theater, and that opening battle scene was just so intense. I don't know if you remember a film called A Bridge Too Far. I saw it on TV back in the 70s. It was on Channel 5, and I think they played it in two parts.
Okay.
There was that one. But the one I really am focused on, it's a more recent one, was Fury. And, you know, it's the one with Brad Pitt, Shia LaBeouf, John Bernthal, about the tank unit that was behind enemy lines. Really violent, really intense film. I mean, it was really, really intense.
Yeah, that was a good one. I remember watching that at home.
I did not see
that. Yeah, that was a very good movie. Very good.
Really, really good movie. Sad, but just... I actually served in the Marines, but when I saw that, I'm 50, and I wanted to reenlist after seeing that. It got me that good. It got me going that good. It was such an intense movie, and just the whole thing about it, because they were... Basically, they were outnumbered and just weren't going to give up the fight. You know, that's what I liked about it. They were outnumbered. There was no quit in them. There was just no quit, no matter what.
Excellent. All right, Patrick. Thank you so much. Madeline also has a video, a movie she wants to tell us about. Hey, Madeline, how are you?
Good morning. I'm okay. I happen to think about the Five Fighting Sullivans.
Now, is that actually what Saving Private Ryan is somewhat based on? Because it's about all these brothers that die at war, and that's why they have to save Private Ryan.
Well, it could be, but I never saw Private Ryan. But the other one is about five brothers that were lost. It is based on a true story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think they have new rules now that siblings can't join together.
Yeah, and actually, I just saw this online that the Five Fighting Sullivans, that was the inspiration for the movie Saving Private Ryan.
Okay, well, I wasn't sure of that.
Well, if you get a chance, check out Saving Private Ryan, and I'll look up Five Fighting Sullivans, okay?
Good idea.
All right, Madeline, have a great weekend.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you so much. 312-981-7200. After 3 o'clock in the morning, Katie McFadden from the Sierra Club of Illinois will be on to chat about why are no women running for governor in Illinois. What's holding them back, and how can we change that? 312-981-7200 is the number. Matt Buvala with you on 720 WGN. Matt Buvala with you, 720 WGN. Texter from 815 said the zookeeper's wife. That's a new one, right? That's the Jessica Chastain movie. Is that right? That's out right now, I think.
Fairly new?
I think. I would like to see
even
that.
Even though I've heard that. Maybe I heard it when it was a book.
920 says Casablanca is, of course, his favorite of all time.
Patton.
Oh.
He won an Academy Award for Best Actor.
Mrs. Miniver is mentioned, and mm-hmm. Shining Through with Michael Douglas. I don't know that one at all. Mm.
I got, if you want a kind of a fun one,
mm-hmm.
This was with not Robert Redford. Who's Dirty Harry?
Clint Eastwood.
Thank you. And it was called Kelly's Heroes.
Kelly's Heroes.
It takes it. Donald Sutherland's in it with him, and it's the hilarious part is because you know the spaghetti westerns
mm-hmm.
that he was in. You know, a Fistful of Dollars, A Few Dollars More, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Sure.
And what was the main scene? It's like when there's the three of them are all standing around in Good and Bad and the Ugly. They're all standing around the cemetery looking at each other, and the music's going, and they're all waiting each other to draw. And there's a scene in Kelly's Heroes where the three of the main characters, Americans, come out into the street to face off a German Tiger tank that is guarding a bank in the middle of a town, which is about 50 miles behind enemy lines. And it's this ragtag group of American soldiers that are going after this gold in this bank. And the three of them face off against the Tiger Tank commander, who's all by himself. It's hilarious because they play the Western gunslingers song, music behind them. It's funny. I was laughing in the theaters when it happened. You got to see it. It's called Kelly's Heroes.
Texter says there was a TV show called Combat from the 60s that starred Vic Morrow. That was good. Mm-hmm. And 630 writes Enemy at the Gates, great World War II sniper movie. So you got
Great Escape, I'll throw in there too.
The Great Escape.
Another prisoner of war camp, again, with a lot of Steve McQueen's in it, a lot of great top actors at the time, male actors at the time. All trying to figure out how to escape from this quote-unquote escape-proof German prison.
You know what I saw just a year ago? That was a big deal at the time. What was the code-breaking movie? Redmayne? I don't remember who the...
The code... Oh, yeah. I know which one you're talking about. The guy basically invented the computer.
Break the German codes.
Yeah, right.
That was really good.
Benedict Cumberbatch was starred in it.
Yes,
yeah.
Thank you. And then also, I really enjoyed the Brad Pitt movie that was out about a year ago. Was it Alliance? About him and his wife and whether or not she's a traitor or she's a spy.
I missed
spy.
That one.
The French actress who was in Inception.
Got me on that one.
But that was really good as well. I think that was called Alliance. All right, let's talk about females running for governor here in the state of Illinois and why it's not happening after the news. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. 3 o'clock in the morning, you heard the tone. Here's Roger. Good morning, everybody. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Showcase Studio here on the Magnificent Mile. Seems like a nice night outside, although it is after 3 a.m. and just a lot of bros walking around Michigan Avenue right now.
Are they wandering aimlessly?
Oh, my God.
Or do they have a purpose?
They seem to be in groups who probably struck out and have now decided to call it a night. Okay. Looks like.
That's good.
Looks like they're on their way to better
decisions. Yeah, most bars are done within the next hour, so whatever.
Yeah. It's probably time. As we've always said on this show, if you haven't figured it out by 3 a.m., it's time to just head home. No good decisions are being made after 3 a.m. Never are. Never are. By the way, so the big air and water show this weekend, Raj.
Yeah.
Do you ever go to that?
Bridget and I did a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
We parked far away and walked back in those days when we could walk.
Mm-hmm.
Bridget now hobbles with a cane.
Sure.
And I trip a lot.
Bad combination.
Yeah. So no, we don't. Plus, I'm working now on weekends.
Right.
So
you need to get your happy time.
Yeah. Right. And Sunday's not a good day for me because, you know, I got that quick turnaround for the shifts. And then tomorrow is the big birthday celebration for her eldest granddaughter. She already had the official birthday on Wednesday. This is with all the friends over at play place where we sit on a corner table and drink lots of water and soda and eat pizza.
So it's like a Chuck E. Cheese type
celebration? Yeah, I think, but it's more of a play. Last year, they went to a place where they had laser tag, tons of video games. There was a great Galaga.
Galaga.
I loved
Galaga.
Galaga. I like Galaga.
I know it's Galaga. Wait a minute. First of all, breaking news. Roger, did you see, now there's been a lot of talk, and we'll get to this later in the show, monuments and things that are being torn down. But the Chuck E. Cheese people, I saw somebody posted online, that crazy-ass animatronic band that is kind of from a horror movie.
Yeah.
They're breaking that up.
They're breaking up the old band?
Yes.
Well, none of them worked anyway.
No. Probably not for about
25
years
now. And not in sync either.
Yeah. It's like being inside a Stephen King movie when
you're watching it. Yeah, it's just horrible.
Yeah. So they're taking them down.
Oh, what's going to replace them?
I don't know. I live in this world now where I just read headlines and then I move on.
And then you move on?
And then I move on. I mean, on that story, I felt like I didn't need to get, you know, deeper into the weeds on that one, you know.
Well, let's...
just knowing that band was still in the Chuck E. Cheese's, because I haven't been there in about 10 years or more.
Right.
And that...
Chuck E. Cheese, you're right, 15 hours ago, Chuck E. Cheese may retire. This is the headline.
Okay.
This is from Jezebel. It's the first one I clicked on. I have no idea what it is. Chuck E. Cheese may retire its terrifying animatronic band. From yesterday afternoon.
See? There you go.
Robot musicians might soon...
Chuck E. Cheese thought they'd bury that on a Friday, and with all the Confederate stuff going on, nobody would notice. But we saw what's happening there.
Let's see here. It's that children no longer like them.
Never liked them,
I know! Oh, this is from CNN, reporting Chuck E. Cheese is starting by renovating 4 locations in Texas, then 3 in Kansas City to see how a more streamlined Chuck E. Cheese will go over.
Or maybe just one that's clean and bright.
Doesn't have pizza all over the floor.
My guess is, that they've been long overdue.
I like Chuck E. Cheese, but oh my gosh.
It's fun to make fun of.
Yeah.
All right, something we do want to get further in the weeds with. Katie McFadden joins us on the phone right now. She's from the Sierra Club of Illinois. Hey, Katie, how are you this morning?
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for staying up so late. We do appreciate it. I know you probably just got in from the bar like 5 minutes ago, so I appreciate you cutting your night short for us. Thanks for jumping on the phone. So, Katie, I wanted to chat with you tonight because I know Joanna Klonsky, and she, I read some stuff that she had out or was quoted in, and there's this website out that I think you're a part of, too, about why are there no women running for governor in Illinois? We've got all these guys running for governor. We have no women running for governor. What's going on with that?
I think the latest tally is, what, 9 men now running for governor?
Yeah, I think so.
Changes by the day.
That's just, and that's on the Dem side. Of course, Rauner will, has a nice little war chest going, so he's seeking re-election. But yeah, 9 guys on the Democrat side, and I think 2 of which are billionaires or millionaires, right?
That's true, and I think, money in politics is definitely tied to this, so I hope we get to talk about that too. But yeah, this came about a few girls that, kind of get together sometimes that kind of also work in politics were, we were sitting down over dinner and talking about the governor's race, and I forget who exactly it was, but we kind of said, can we just take 1 minute first and talk about the fact that there are actually 0 women running for governor and how absurd that is, especially after the presidential election that we just had and the fact that it's 2017. And so that's where we kind of came up with this joke. Are there any women running for ilgovernor.com? And we, went ahead and created that website. And when you go to it, there's a big giant red no on the screen just in case you needed a reminder. So, as a way to just, it's tongue in cheek, but it felt like sort of the elephant in the room that needed to be said before, we kind of get deep into the weeds on the race itself is, there are no women running. And that indicates, I think, a problem with our democracy that needs to be collectively talked about here in the state of Illinois.
And while you're very progressive, you work with Sierra Club, and right now we need a Democrat to run because we've already got a Republican in office who's going to run again. It is a problem nationally on both sides of the aisle, isn't it?
That's so right. I mean, there's only 6 female governors in the entire United States. Only 20% of Congress are women, and thinking about, again, like you said, both sides of the aisle. But we know that this is an issue because there's just an unequal playing field. And so, with a Democratic and a political system that sort of props up one type of person and makes it a lot harder for women and people of color to run, that's just, it's clearly indicating a problem with our democracy right now.
Well, so 20% of Congress, 25% of state legislature seats, 12% of governorships, 24% of statewide elected offices, even though your last count, I think around 50% of the population. So you say it's a problem with our democracy. What inherently is it a problem with our democracy, or is it a problem with us as a society? Do we not, because a lot of, Politico did this huge research project into why aren't women running? Why are so many women not holding offices? And a lot of it seemed to, at least some of it, right, seemed to stem from women's feelings about it. Like, oh, I don't have time because of the kids, or I'm happy in my job, or men just seem to have more, yeah, I could do that, I'll run for that. And women seem to be a little more thoughtful about these things. Let's tackle those things a little bit separately. What is the problem with our democracy?
Well, I think you said it right. So we found this, studies show that when women run, they win. They win at the same rates of men. But it is one of the major problems that we have is just a persistent dearth of female candidates, right? So there are more barriers that are put up to women, wanting to actually consider running, whether it's telling girls at a young age that they could be president or, you've probably heard the statistics that women need to be told multiple times that they would be great in the elected office, whereas, the joke is men just need to look in the mirror and they think they'd make a great president. There are some of those sort of like societal things, as you mentioned, that we really do need to tackle. But, when I say things like democracy, I think, it because it's about representation, right? So if we're only, 12% of the governorships and 20% of Congress, do we know that all of, America's interests are being represented and legislated by, 80%, almost or nearly 80% white male Congress? It's hard to say that. But I think some of the issues that are standing in the way. I mean, one is the persistence of money in politics. And like you said, we may have a billionaire versus a billionaire in the race. And I bet, I don't know if you have a $1 billion and maybe would want to donate it to a female to run for office, but that may actually get a woman in the race, you know? So thinking about that persistence of money in politics, I think, is a big barrier. And especially, you know, there are still walls up right now that are creating, you know, an old boys club in politics. It makes it harder for women to fundraise, to get access to those connections, to, you know, they're sort of excluded from financial circles, less women to kind of make introductions to those people who do have the money. So I think money in politics has a lot to do with this as well.
Do you think, by the way, if I had $1 billion, I'd look in the mirror and say, Matt, you got $1 billion. You'd be a great governor. Actually, if I had $1 billion, I'd probably go straight for president. Why would I even run for governor? Ha. Especially in Illinois. You got nothing but a mess here. I don't want to take that over. Do you think that Hillary Clinton is a factor in this at all? Because Hillary has been in politics forever, and she has faced such adversity, and we could have arguments over whether that's her fault or you know, the fault of the people that attack her all the time. There's probably some blame on both sides. But when women watch what Hillary has gone through, both as being the first lady, as being Secretary of State, as being a senator, and running for president twice, do you think sometimes women look at that and go, God, I don't want to go through all that?
I think that's certainly a possibility, right? It's hard to deny that running for office as a woman has very unique challenges that could be dissuading people from running, right? I mean, I think that we have sort of a double standard for women. You know, women need to be both extremely qualified, in fact, often more qualified than their male counterparts. And we definitely saw that in the 2016 presidential election, to sort of seem like they could run for office. I think the qualified factor is also something that's very prevalent in the Illinois race for governor, you know, both women, but also, I guess, political leaders feeling like there's a higher bar for what women to have had to have achieved and, you know, have under their belt to be qualified to run for governor. But, you know, with women, you both need to be extremely qualified, but likable, right? And there's sort of this gendered likability. You know, we notice women's hair and clothes more than men's. And so there's, you know, women are subject to a lot of negative and personal attacks. And in a lot of ways, it doesn't sound like the most uplifting experience. And I think that's also kind of part of the idea behind this website. It's why we need to be encouraging more women to run for things like governor, you know, encouraging women in general to actually run. Because like I said, when women do run, they win. And I think when we have women running, it lifts up other women. So one example I've heard recently was the city of Austin, Texas, their city council is 70% women. And, you know, we're kind of like, well, how did that happen? But when Wendy Davis was on the ballot for governor in 2014, it sort of created this sea change. So women, a lot of women also ran in 2015 or 2014, kind of being inspired by Wendy Davis. And so even though, you know, Wendy Davis didn't win, she sort of created space for all these women to run, and a lot of them did win. And then we end up with a city council with 70% women. So, you know, the need for women to get themselves on the ballot, to, you know, to actually go ahead and run, even, I guess, you know, when you're thinking about things like that, Hillary factor is really important.
You know, you mentioned the attacks that women go under. I think in politics today, especially in big races that a lot of money is being spent on, there's more ability for media to find things out probably than ever before, because there's so many people outside of the mainstream media with blogs and everything else. There's just so much coverage all the time that any negativity is going to find its way out there. And I wonder if for men, like you say, men look in the mirror and think, oh, I'd be a good governor, I'd be a good president. I wonder if men not let it roll off their back, but if men just don't care as much about the negativity that comes out, or we're a little bit so pompous about it that I don't know. Do you know what I'm saying?
I think there's kind of two things there. I mean, there's definitely a confidence gap, right? And so, you know, yeah, women need to be told more frequently that they would be great if they ran for office. But, you know, they also need to be reminded that, you know, even when the attacks are, you know, being strewn at them, that they, you know, they are still qualified, and that, you know, to keep your head up. I mean, that's, again, speaking in very broad generalizations of, like,
of course,
women and men. But I think another thing is, there's a lot of interesting polling around negative ads and negative campaigning, and how often when women decide to go negative and, you know, take out negative ads on their opponent, that that's perceived much more negatively by voters than if men were doing it. Does that make sense? And so,
yeah,
sort of this double standard too around going negative in campaigns.
Well, there's a huge double standard with most things with men and women, right? I mean, there still is definitely in our society. We look at women differently than we look at men. And Katie, I don't mean to say anything bad here, but part of that is your fault too. You know what I mean? Women are so freaking hard on women. It's amazing how women will, you know, be... Women attack Hillary just as hard as men do, I feel like. And like Heidi Stevens here at the Tribune has written articles about how she gets so much hate mail about her hair and the picture of her hair in the newspaper. And a lot of it comes from women. Women have to, and listen, we have all sorts of issues with men. There's no, I'm not minimizing that at all. But women have to lift each other up more in a lot of ways too, don't they?
I think that's true. I think that, you know, I found personally being a woman that works in politics, and, you know, there's not a whole ton of us even still, that my, you know, relationships and support from other women who are in the same field are something that's really important for me, and can kind of help, can help when things are tough. And so I think, yeah, women supporting women is obviously the case. And then, you know, something else is the role of men, you know, and I, you spoke to this, but we need progressive men, you know, both who are established in their careers, but also young progressive men to be advocates as well. And so I think, you know, when we talk about this topic, you know, men may get defensive, like, oh, I voted for Hillary, or I've given money to women candidates, and all of that is so great. And we need that. We need men supporting women, just as we need women supporting women. But there's also, you know, there are next steps. So, you know, have you ever mentored a young woman who's getting started in her career? You know, I think that's something that's really important. And that's something I've had in my career is, you know, a man who has been willing to kind of open doors and you know, help me create relationships with, you know, definitely women, but also men in this field as well. And that can be a really, really important thing. So, yeah, I think both men and women kind of thinking about what their role is in helping support, you know, to make sure that we do have a more representative government.
And one of the pieces I read here, it said that, you know, there's no good Democratic farm system. I imagine the same thing on the Republican side. But, there's no good tools for helping women get involved and get started and get going. So how does that change? What can you do? And what are you guys trying to do to encourage more women to start running?
Well, I think there's a few levels, right? So one is naming it, which I think we've started with here. And then the second is, yeah, we are calling on the Democratic Party of Illinois to recognize that this is an issue and help create that pipeline. You know, more training for women, more training and outreach for women and for people of color to get into politics, to be supported by the current system, to be trained, to have that access to fundraising and capital and resources. Those are all things that we need if we really want to build the party that I think that we want and need to be here in Illinois. So that's an important piece of this, and we're hopeful that that's something that will come out of this effort.
It's too late probably for a woman to really run for governor of Illinois. I mean, one could, but it's such a crowded, crazy field. Now, I guess you would definitely stand out, but I'm imagining that you're not thinking somebody's going to step forward at this point and run for governor this time around.
I don't know. I don't think so. But I think one thing to note here is, you know, the effort behind this was not necessarily to propel a woman into the race because it was fairly late, but it was to kind of call this out as an issue, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, nothing can be more harmful to women than than Bruce Rauner, right? And so I think collectively, we need, that is sort of mission number one, right? Is like, we need someone in the governor's mansion who is going to fight for women and fight for women's rights. I think that has still been yet to seen from the Democratic field. I don't think any of the candidates quite yet are really speaking to women and necessarily their platform on women. So I'm eager to hear that as the months unfold and we see more of their platforms. But I think that women are obviously an important electorate. And, while one may not be running for governor for this year, I'm hopeful that we'll have a female governor in Illinois pretty soon.
Lisa Madigan a few years ago was being pushed a little bit to run for governor, and she said she was not going to do that while her dad was in office. Would a son have ever publicly decided not to run for office because of his dad's position, do you think?
Oh, wow. That's such an interesting question. I've never considered that. I don't know. I think obviously there is a lot of baggage there. I think Lisa Madigan would be a great candidate for governor. But yeah, I don't know. That's a great question.
With her dad and his position and the fight he has with Governor Rauner, there might be too much baggage for her to carry into that race. But
like a tricky time.
It is a tricky time, absolutely. If her dad wasn't Mike Madigan, it might be a different story on whether she could win or not and things like that. But I do think it's very interesting that she decided she wouldn't run while he's in office, because you don't see like... But Rob Blagojevich had family in office. That doesn't stop him. The Dailies all have families in offices. That it doesn't stop anybody else, it seems like. And so maybe she made that decision for other reasons too. But to say, well, my dad's in office, I'm not going to do it, seems like something that a guy wouldn't have done.
Yeah, you could certainly make that case. One thing I really appreciate about the Attorney General is that she has been a big advocate for women and for women running for office. I heard her speak a couple weeks ago and she was very poignant. She said, I think it's brutal and it's unfair, but it's totally worth it. And that was about running for office and speaking to a room full of women who were considering it. And so I thought that was, her being out there and being honest about, her struggles and journey, I think is helpful for women who are considering it and being really honest that it is hard, but yeah. That it is worth it.
Well, Katie, I have two more questions for you, but I have to take a break and get to the news. Can you stay up just a little bit longer?
Oh yeah, I'll be here.
All right, excellent. Hold on 1 second. Katie McFadden from the Sierra Club of Illinois and the website, which does have some information on what you can do and what women can start doing to get involved, is are there any women running for ilgovernor.com? It's a little long, might take you a second to type, but are there any women running for Illinois, just IL, for ilgovernor.com? Check that out. We'll have more with Katie after the news, which is next on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. We're live from the Allstate Showcase Studio here in the historic Tribune Tower, chatting with Katie McFadden from the Sierra Club of Illinois. Katie, real quick, let's jump to this. Tell me a little bit about the Sierra Club of Illinois and what you guys are working on right now.
Sure, would be happy to. So here in Illinois, the Sierra Club is kind of a unique environmental organization because we have just a number of members. We have almost 100,000 members and supporters across the state. So we're really a grassroots environmental organization. Main things we're working on here in Chicago, we are working to move beyond fossil fuels and try and get the city to commit to a goal of 100% clean energy. This is something that cities across the country are doing right now, and we think Chicago should be a leader and take that leap and commit to that goal and try to figure out how to get there. We're working on a lot of issues around clean water, protecting our Great Lakes, especially from threats from the Trump administration, but also from threats like invasive species and trying to protect our streams all across the city. And then we do a lot of outdoor programs, trying to get kids out in nature and taking folks on hikes and all things like that. And then part of my job is I run all of our political work. So we're the only environmental PAC in the state, and we make endorsements and try to elect people that are great on the environment.
when you say you want Chicago to go 100% clean energy, that would be a goal. That's not achievable as we stand right now with current technology that's available without a city going more bankrupt than it already is it?
No. So, yeah, this is about setting a goal and trying to figure out how we get there. You know, this technology and clean energy is changing so extremely rapidly. I mean, solar is now cheaper than coal and almost cheaper than natural gas in many places around the country. So we're really seeing a clean energy boom right now. So what we're hoping to do is set that as a goal and try to figure out how to get there. We could get a big chunk of the way there already right now with existing technology and try to get there along the way while making sure that we're providing jobs and creating jobs right here in Chicago rather than just bringing energy in, you know, from out of state.
Solar is cheaper right now, but it's still less predictable, right? I mean, I would imagine solar is an incredibly good option in Nevada and Arizona, places like that. Here in Chicago, is solar, we couldn't do it on solar alone, could we?
You know, technology here is changing. And I think one way to think about this is solar is a huge source of energy in Germany. And we're about the same sort of, you know, latitude and as they are. And so would we do it on solar alone? Probably not. I think it would be a mix of technologies. One of the emerging technologies we're really excited about learning more about would be offshore wind. This has this would be actually wind turbines out in Lake Michigan. Has huge potential to generate a whole lot of electricity and really close to where it's needed most, right? Because you can generate it close to population centers rather than just, you know, down in cornfields of central Illinois. So it's something that also is emerging in Europe, and we'd be excited to figure out how we could do it right here in Chicago.
But there'll be a lot of pushback on that too, right? Because offshore turbines, people don't like that idea. That battle has been fought elsewhere, right? Is it overseas that I'm thinking of, or where is it that there's been a battle about putting some offshore?
It was mentioned a few years ago up in Evanston. There was a big push on it. And, you know, we're the Sierra Club, so we care deeply about the environmental issues here, right? We want to be involved because we want to make sure it's in a way that is protecting the lake and is, you know, is not harming the environment. People worry about the view issue, right? Yeah. They don't want to see it. And I get that, right? You know, the modeling we've seen is if it was just 5 miles offshore, which is probably about the place that we would start, at least if you hold your thumb out to the, you know, kind of give a thumbs up to the lake and kind of squint one eye, the turbine would only be 1/3 of your thumbnail tall. So, and most days you wouldn't even be able to see it at all. And that's because a lot of the pollution coming from Indiana actually kind of hazing the view. So,
wow. You know, blaming Indiana for, aren't we creating enough pollution to cause some haze?
We are, well, right, not right here in Chicago, but, you know, all those factories that kind of do blow that haze and do contribute to air pollution issues here. So, you know, we think there's a way we can, you know, do it in the right way. And so we'd be interested in exploring that.
Interesting. Okay. So when we talk about the lack of women running and we talk about there's no good farm system, there's no good progress. So what can people do to try to encourage that? You talked about males need to mentor young women and things like that, but what is something somebody could do tomorrow to try to encourage more women to start running for office?
You know, tell women that you know that you think would be great and are qualified that they should consider it. You know, I think the stat that woman needs to be told 7 times, I mean, be one of those 7. Encourage people who should think about this and, you know, tell them why they're great. Another thing would be contributing to female candidates. You know, like I said, the influence of money in politics is real. And so, you know, finding those women who are extremely qualified or maybe that you know and helping them, you know, whether it's with a contribution or connecting them with other folks that you know, that stuff really can go a long way.
Well, the women that I know in general that I think should be doing this are the Katie McFadden's and Joanna Klonsky's and Erica Wozniak's of the world, and they're not running. So what about you or Joanna or Erica? Why are you not running for office, Katie? And I don't mean like, oh, you should be doing it if you're talking about it. But you're somebody who's so politically active and involved in these things. Have you thought about running for office?
You know, I'd be lying if I didn't say that I, along with, you know, so many women in America, were, you know, deeply affected by the 2016 election and, you know, what happened and sort of where we thought our country was going, and you know, am feeling inspired around the need for women to run. Right now I'm taking that energy and, you know, doing what I can to encourage other women, whether it's with the website or on a one-to-one basis. And if, you know, I'm trying to do what makes the most sense for you know, contributing to this movement right now. And if at some point that feels like I need to put my hat in the ring, I think I'm not eliminating that as a possibility. But for now, I'm just telling all the great women that I know that they should run.
See, but that's the problem. If all the great women are just telling each other they should run and nobody's doing it, like you said, the guys would look in the mirror and go, yeah. The guys would all be in the room arguing about, no, it should be me, no, it should be me, no, it should be me. And then you guys are all just, you really ought to because you're great. And then nobody's doing it. Come on, come on, come on. Got to get some of you girls running and doing these things, because I worry that it's, you know, they say you are the fairer sex, and you know, that sounds sexist and all, but it's true. Like, you guys are too nice about these things at times, that you're just, you know, you're encouraging other women to run when maybe you or Joanna or somebody should just be going out and doing it. That's, I worry about, that's what we're, you know, we're wasting time with finding the right people when the right people are right there in the room.
Look, I don't disagree, and I think in the next few years you will see a lot of those people starting to jump in the ring. I think, you know, we're hearing about it now as it is approaching election season.
Is there any do the Democratic parties or the Republican parties, do they have councils or forums to help raise new candidates and to raise diverse candidates and female candidates and things like that? Or does neither party do a good job of that at all because it's mostly a bunch of white guys and they like to keep it that way?
You know, there are certainly efforts along those lines. I know more about the ones on the Democratic side than the Republican, and I think those are really needed. I think they need to be bigger and stronger and bringing in more women and actually more diverse women as well. So that, you know, they actually are representing the women of the state. So, you know, some of these programs exist in small numbers. I think what we need to see, though, is a Democratic Party that we're hearing is, you know, proclaiming that they're committed to this and putting some real effort behind it in a really concerted way.
Are you worried that, because, I mean, clearly everybody that's been listening to this interview knows that you are very progressive, that you're very unhappy with the Trump administration, and all that's fine. Are you worried, though, that Democrats, as we head into the midterms coming up not that long away, are going to miss a big opportunity because of, you know, the way the Trump administration has gone so far? Here's this huge opportunity to win a bunch of races, retake the Senate, retake the House. Are the Democrats doing enough to put themselves in a position to win the races they need to win to get power back?
Here's my fear is, you know, in 2016, we ran against Trump, and in 2018, we can't just run against Trump again. You know, I think being the party of not him didn't work. And I think if we do that again in 2018, shame on us. I think the Democrats in the state and in the country need to figure out what we're for and run on that, because I do think our values and our policies are better and are what our country needs. And I think we need to be articulating that, and that's going to win the hearts and minds of voters across the state and across the country. But if we keep focusing on how bad he is, I fear that we're not going to get there.
It's going to be interesting, to say the least. Katie McFadden is with the Sierra Club of Illinois. Illinois.sierraclub.org is their website. If people want to find more information about how to help women run for office, is there a good place to direct them to, Katie?
Well, first you should go to Are There Any Women Running for IsleGovernor.com. We have a few resources on that website. You know, She Should Run, Emily's List. These are great organizations that are doing this work to help prop up women who are thinking about it. So check out them, run for office, support women. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Are There Any Women Running for ILGovernor.com? You can follow Katie on Twitter at Katie McFadden, McFadden, at Katie McFadden. That's KADY. And you could tweet her and yell at her that she should run for office as well. Katie, thank you so much for staying up so late with us. I hope we talk again.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You have a great weekend. Katie McFadden with the Sierra Club of Illinois. And it is an issue. There are not enough women running, not only here in Illinois, but nationally, way underrepresented. As we were saying earlier in the interview, women represent 20% of Congress, 25% of state legislature seats, 12% of governorships, only hold 24% of statewide elected offices like attorney general, lieutenant governor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And as Katie said, when women run, they win. We just need to get more of them running. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you on 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us. You know, I really think that Hillary Clinton, so it's not going to work out for her. I can't imagine she would run for president again. I would hope she doesn't, because it just hasn't worked out. And I voted for her last time, and I would maybe vote for her again. Depends on who she was running against, I suppose. But I don't think she should run. But here's what I think she should do. She's still got a huge following. I think she should tackle this issue that Katie and I were talking about. She should spend her time now encouraging more women to run. And, you know, actually, who I do think might end up running sometime soon for some sort of office will be Chelsea Clinton. Chelsea Clinton, I've seen her tweet things. People attack her relentlessly on Twitter, Chelsea Clinton. And she handles it with such aplomb. I'm so impressed by her, because people are just nasty to her and have been nasty to her whole life, been nasty to her parents her whole life. Believe me, they bring a lot of that on themselves, but she handles it so well with such dignity and class, and seems to be out there fighting for good things and fighting for what's right. I would imagine that at some point Hillary runs for office. Maybe not. Maybe she saw enough of it with her parents and wants nothing to do with that, but she didn't just, you know, move completely out of the public light. She could do that if she wanted to. She doesn't do that. So I do think she has a taste for serving in that way. And I could see her running someday. So it will be very interesting to see. Raj, can you think of a woman you've ever voted for like a big public office?
I mean,
I guess we all voted on Lisa Madigan's attorney general. So we all voted on that. So I guess I probably voted for her.
Most of the time.
Yeah. So yeah. I voted for her, I imagine. I voted for Hillary.
I'll be honest.
There's just not a lot of women I've had out there to vote for in my life.
Most of the women.
Judgeships and all that stuff.
Yeah. I was about ready to say that most of the women that are on a ballot are judges.
Yeah.
Or the Cook County Commission or the Water District. There are several women on that board. The Water District Commission. Trying to think of very few aldermanic women, at least not in my ward. And there hasn't been. Of course, we had Bernie Stone for like 10 billion years in the 50th ward.
Well, that's the thing. Those aldermen, once they get in,
they don't
move. They're like, it's like House of Representatives.
I think our alderman now is a woman. I believe she is. I believe our 50th ward.
I believe? You don't even know your own
ward? I'm trying to remember the last time we voted. And there were several candidates that were running, and I'm trying to remember the outcome. Yes, 50th ward now has a female alderman, which is kind of weird to say, a female alderman, alderwoman.
Yeah.
But on the floor, they call each other aldermen. I'm trying to think what other offices.
312 text Carol Moseley Braun as senator.
That was a long time ago, right?
Well, just recently, who won Senate here in Illinois? Who's our senator? Besides Dick Durbin.
War veteran.
The Iraqi war veteran.
Yeah.
Tammy Duckworth.
Yeah.
How sad. It's hard for us to come up with Tammy Duckworth because she's been in the news a lot.
I just gave her the microphone to talk when she was in the 4th of July parade in Skokie.
Oh,
I should have remembered.
You should have.
I know. I've got a lot on my mind right now.
You do. I think Patty should run, too. I was telling her that when we changed.
She needs to run.
I could see her doing
it. But you know what? And I think she's talked about this before. I think that she feels she does more good in this forum than she would be able to do in that forum.
I understand that, but there that can't possibly be true. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if she was the if she was just like on a local school board, then yeah, of course she does more.
But if she was in,
the legislature, state legislature, while she couldn't maybe achieve,
she would be
as
one
much,
voice of many. Yet here, she would be a voice for many.
Right, but she could still do a lot of media outreach.
Not true,
and still be out there all the time, and mm-hmm. it takes one person to start moving the needle.
That's true.
Just like Katie was talking about.
Yeah.
Women running means more women running, and you know, women have to step up and do it and get out there. And maybe, you know, Katie said the study shows that women need to be told several times they would be good at this. So I'm going to call Katie back in 10 minutes when she falls asleep. I'm going to say,
no,
by the way,
don't call back in
you,
10.
I told you, you would be good at this. I'm going to keep calling until she, you know, she said, women, whatever, we're, guys are kind of conceited and we all think we'd be great at this. Women need a little more nudging. So let's call Patty in 10 minutes.
No, you're not going to call Patty.
Why? This is when we're up.
You know, this woman never sleeps. And when she does, leave her alone.
She's probably not sleeping. She's always up at this time.
She's always up. 24/7. This woman does not sleep.
This is why she should be in office. 630 writes, I live in Roselle, and my state representative is a Republican female, Christine Winger.
Okay.
There you go. There
you
go. And I imagine both sides of the aisle need more women.
Well, of course.
Katie wasn't as concerned with the other side. Cause she's
and you know, it doesn't matter that you're one side or the other. You could be independent.
You could.
There are independents
there
in the legislature.
That's got to be relatively rare, though, right?
Because it's rare.
Because
but
of the money situation.
Are.
Because you need that network of money these days.
Yeah, you don't get the backing. But if you can get enough people with the money to back you.
Well, that's hard to do as an independent.
I know. The job is harder, which often means less people take the chance.
Yeah, maybe we make Jess run. She's young.
She could
do it.
She should
run for office.
She's telling you what to do.
Jess, you want to run for office? Turn on the on-air microphone. Don't say it in my ear.
Even though I heard it in your ear.
I would vote for Patty.
You would vote for Patty. Why wouldn't you run? Do you ever have any political aspiration? Have you ever thought I could do that or I would be a good... Anything?
I don't know if it's really my thing, but I do have a friend. Fun story. She did intern at WGN years ago with me, and she now lives out in the D.C. area and does political work, political communications.
Oh,
work.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
She interned at the White House.
And does she like it?
She does. She loves it.
Boy, what a great time to be working in D.C. I mean, maybe you're unhappy and everything like that, but what a time of life to say I worked in D.C. Like, I lived in Los Angeles during the O.J. trial. I know that's a weird correlation, but what a great time to have lived in Los Angeles, because that was such a national crazy story, right? I was right there working, like, you know, we're doing stuff in radio about the trial and covering the trial and just living near where it was all going on. It was such a crazy, crazy time. To live in D.C. right now and be part of that machine to experience this historical part of life, I think is really cool. Even if you're not happy with what's going on out there or whatever, but to say you worked there when all this was going on, I mean, people will be talking about this first year of a presidency for many years, is my guess. I had a friend of mine today suggesting that Trump is going to step down. And I think there is no chance in hell that's going to happen. I will explain why after the news. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. You heard the tone, 4 in the morning. Here's the news with Roger. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. Another hour left in the show, a little bit less than that. Max and O will be along with the morning show at 5, and then you got your Mike Steven with Outside the Loop Radio at 6, and then Sweet Lou Manfredini leads into John Williams at 10. So a busy morning here on WGN Radio, and as Roger was reporting, the Chicago Air and Water Show kicks off. They've been practicing now for a couple of days. You may have heard the jets roar by if you're in the downtown area. Roger, we are going to brave it tomorrow and head out there.
Uh-huh.
We last went a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We came down, just kind of winged it, and ended up walking
I see what you did there.
Oh, I didn't even realize what I did it like. Right? We headed out to Navy Pier and just kind of walked out there and sat down. So if you don't go onto the pier itself, if you go to the north side of the pier, there's a road that goes back to the parking garage and then a little walkway on the edge of the road. And we kind of just walked out there and sat on the cement and watched the show, which is a little like the air and water part is further away. At least the jumping out of planes and stuff, you couldn't see it that well. But when the planes flew by, you know, the planes go a long way along the lakefront. So those buzz by like crazy. But tomorrow we're doing something. So, you know, I do the little things for DNA info. So I'm reading the DNA info thing every day. And there is a special thing they're doing. There's something called, Roger, you probably know about this, the Theater on the Lake.
Oh, yeah, they're refurbishing it.
They are refurbishing it.
Yeah, it's a beautiful job.
$6 million renovation is going on right now at the Theater on the Lake. So there's a group called Chicago Social, which organizes sports leagues and events, things like that.
I think they were the ones that, when we had a softball team, that they were the ones that organized the league and set up the schedule and provided the umpires.
What's going on with the WGN softball team? Did it not play this year?
No, we did not play this year.
We were defunct?
There were concerns that we wouldn't be able to get enough of both genders out at the same time.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's a shame.
Yeah. But there were other years.
If I didn't live 45 minutes away, I'd love to play, but it's kind of tough.
I know. There have been a few years over the last almost 11 years that I've been here that they haven't been able to field a team for whatever reasons.
My guess is the last time I played on the WGN radio softball team was literally 19 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been a while. This is actually, Roger, this I just realized. So this September,
20 years?
Will be 20 years since I first started working at WGN
Radio. Look at you.
As John Williams' producer.
Wow. Is that the longest you... Well, you've had a few hiatuses.
I worked for 10 straight years as John's producer.
Okay.
And then I had my own company and I left. But we still did video work. I've always had an association with GM.
Right.
I left and then we were doing video work for a couple of years. And then when the current regime took over and Todd got in, I was doing a little bit of filling. And then when Todd took over, I got the permanent shift here. Mm-hmm. So, and this has been like 3 years now, right?
So that's 13 years. Is that the longest you ever worked for a company?
Those 10 years I produced here full-time was the longest I ever worked for a company, yes.
All right.
Yeah. For sure.
Cool.
By far.
That's excellent.
Way by far.
I worked 20 years teaching, actually, technically, 19 years teaching. I rarely took a day off. And I compiled a year's worth of sick leave.
Nice.
And so that counts. So I've got 20 years teaching. That's the longest I've had at one profession, though I taught professionally at 4 schools.
All right. So aren't you, Roger, are you earning an Illinois pension then?
Yes, I am.
You are.
Actually, I'm earning a combined state and city pension because I worked for city schools and outside of Chicago schools, suburban schools, which are part of the state pension fund.
Okay.
So I was able to combine the two, and that's my I do get two pension checks technically a month.
Now, I don't know how the pension works now. I'm always trying to get Colleen to go back into teaching full-time because I want her to earn all the way towards the pension. You didn't have enough years in then to fully get full pension?
I started late.
Okay.
So there was a thing in the Chicago teacher's contract. I'm trying to remember this now because I was looking at this at the time I was realizing I had cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was because I was trying to go for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
I really was. And thinking I needed that as a minimum, which is along the lines of what you're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But I found a paragraph in the contract that said, oh, by the way, we don't care how long you've been teaching. When you reach 62, we really don't want you around anymore. here's how much we'll give you percentage-wise. It was a percentage.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how long you've been teaching. We just, you're 62, have a nice life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm putting it in my own words. But that's sure. basically the way I read it. And I went, huzzah, because I was about ready to be 62 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was checking my long-term and short-term disability, which are all limited. And I wasn't sure what was going to happen with the cancer. I didn't know, if I was going to be around.
Sure.
Two, how long my treatments were going to be, whether they were going to be successful. How would I be able to have a treatment, come back to teach in the classroom and carry on? I didn't know how serious or how not serious this was going to be.
Right.
I had to prepare for the most serious. So it was my intention, before I found this paragraph, to just kind of call it quits. I just didn't feel I could give my all in a classroom if I was worried about whether I was going to live or not.
Sure.
So I found this paragraph, and I said, well, you know, at the end of the school year, on my birthday, I will turn 62, and I've been doing this for 19 years, and I've had a very successful teaching career. And I said, you know, I think it's about time for the youngins, to come in and see what they can do. And so I made my decision then that I would retire.
And so you got a percentage of...
Yeah, I can't remember the exact percentage now, but not a lot, trust me. So this is how I kind of look at it. You know, Bridget's been sick for a long time. She, over 25 years ago, she had to retire mm-hmm. because of her illness.
Mm-hmm.
So we lost basically half our income.
Yeah.
Because she was a full-time nurse, and at times she was making more money than I was. When I retired, our income got cut in another half.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I start hearing the screaming on one side about teachers' pensions and all this other stuff, I get a little rankled.
Well, it's a tough issue because teachers aren't putting into Social Security, so they need this pension. This right. was the trade-off, right?
This was the trade-off.
So the state
we do not
can't
have
go ahead.
Social Security at all. Now, let me correct that. You can have Social Security.
If you worked other jobs.
If I've worked other jobs that you pay into
right,
Social Security.
Right.
Like I qualify for Social Security, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my 10 years here that qualified me.
Right.
Because I did a lot of these years while I was teaching.
Well, but also your years in Las Vegas and other places
right.
you worked.
Right. I had many years before I started teaching that I worked at jobs where you put into Social Security. So
yeah.
Now my Social Security is not a lot. And here's the other thing. Since the pension is in place of the Social Security, when you go to apply for your Social Security, they deduct your pension from the Social Security.
Ugh.
You are not allowed to make more money combined than you would have had you just worked Social Security.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Which is fine by me.
Yeah.
I'm not asking for any special favors.
Because you weren't putting into it that at the time.
I wasn't putting into it.
Right.
I shouldn't get it back. And if I'm already getting the money from the teacher's pension, then yeah, when I take my Social Security, which I haven't yet, when I take it, you adjust it accordingly so that I'm making the same amount of money I would have had
right.
I been working full-time in a non-pension job.
So where it gets interesting with the teacher pensions is, so I was asking about mm-hmm. the years and stuff like that, because I don't know exactly how it all works. But
mm-hmm.
I remember back in the day, like when we were first starting to have kids and Colleen was working with teachers, so like late 90s and, mm-hmm. and early 2000s, there were teachers retiring. And we'd read about these stories in the Trib and stuff, right? School districts would get in trouble because as these people were about to retire, they would take some higher paying job for a year or two because the way the pensions were being
right.
set up was
mm-hmm.
it was... Like you would get.
It's the last 4 years. It's the average, higher average of your last 4 years.
And it would be like 80% of their salary.
Mm hmm. Or whatever the percentage was.
It depended on how many years and things like that.
Right. And what lane you were in and what district you're in.
And some people were getting 80% of the average of their last 4 years' salaries.
Right.
So if you had been a teacher for 25, 30 years and had gone through all the steps because you got your master's plus 15 other hours of credit, things like that, some of these grade school teachers are making, say, $75,000, $80,000 a year.
If they really get up high. And again, they've earned it because they have gone back to school.
Sure.
They have earned their advanced degrees. It's like on if you had a regular job and you had to go to job training. And the more you got trained, the more positions or the higher level of a position you would be qualified for.
And I would never say teachers don't earn that money. Absolutely, they do. The problem the state gets itself into, though, is a teacher who, say, works for 30 years or 35 years and earns that full pension. So say they started out of school at 24 and then worked for 30 years and now they're 54. Well, now we've got 40 to 50 years possibly of paying $60,000 a year possibly to somebody who is not working. And the state cannot possibly sustain that.
Go ahead.
The state's problem. The state agreed to this.
Right.
But they got to figure out a way out of it. No other corporations.
Well, they have. They've already started. So if you go to work now.
Okay.
If you go to work at a, at any school, you have the option now of selecting one of three pension type programs.
Okay.
Two of them. And this is going to the regular pension that I qualify for, where the state pays in, and if you're in a city school, the city pays in, that is being phased out. So now they're trying to, because they couldn't do it overnight.
Well, the problem is they need all the young teachers to pay into this, because the state's not saving up this money. They need the new money coming in.
But after time, those older teachers who would qualify for the full pension will eventually be out of the system. So what they have tried to do over the last number of years is slowly phase in this self-financing pension for teachers. In other words, we will allow you to take X number of dollars or whatever to put into your own personal investment plan.
So basically they're converting teachers to IRAs.
Exactly.
Like the rest of the world.
Exactly.
And the state's putting into it, and you're putting into it, but you're not going to get...
But they're cutting back. The state is slowly cutting back on the newer teachers. And pretty soon, that old pension option will not be available.
Which is what they're going to have to do.
Right.
As sad as it is, the world we live in, you can't guarantee somebody a paycheck for the rest of their life like that, especially with how long we're living. When they started this, I'm sure people were dying at 75 and things like that. And now that we're living to 95 and 100... the state just is not going to be able to afford to keep doing
that. But then Social Security falls into the same thing, because Social Security is for non-government workers.
Right.
It's not just the teachers. You're talking your politicians. You're talking your police, your fire, your city workers, your sanitation workers. All of your public servants have this pension plan. If you are in the public sector or the private sector, you have Social Security.
Right.
So now how long, you know, there have been threats about Social Security, right? That it's not going to last past, what was the latest figure? I think 2035 or something like that was the scare tactic report from Congress. And they were going to try to find a different way to help you save more money because they wanted to close down Social Security. But that, again, is a self-funding program. That's not tax dollars.
Right.
That's a self-funding program. This is a savings plan that was put in place by the government to help people save for the future.
Which I think they will save and will continue. But Social Security is different than what we're talking about with these pensions, where people were earning for the rest of their lives up to 80% of the last 4 years of their salary because... you're not putting that much in, right? I mean, they're deducting from your check. The state is putting in, just like Social Security, but not to the level that's going to cover somebody making possibly up to $60,000 a year.
Right. I'm not making back all the money I put into it.
Right. And with Social Security, you know, we're going to max out at like, what, $2,000 or $3,000 a month.
Maybe
there's $30,000 a year.
Yeah, there's a limit
there.
Yeah.
But some of these teachers were in a good time in a good district and a you know, when things were fiscally a little better, or at least we thought they were rosier than they were, are really retired at the right time and are
making. Well, here's
out.
The other thing, too. I mean, and this is part of what you're saying. It's not that they see, the way you get the higher salary is if you go into management. That's how you get the higher salary. And these are the big salaries that we're talking about. Assistant principals.
Yeah, principals.
Principals and assistant principals. And so what a lot of teachers were trying to do was go back and get their principalship certification and then get on as an assistant principal somewhere and do that for like 2 or 3 years. And that's where the salary jumps. I mean, we're talking from $70,000 a year to maybe $130,000 a year.
Yeah.
So now, out of nowhere, there's that money. Some people tried it. Some tried and didn't get it. But yeah, and that's what those reports focus on. The average salary of a teacher is about $60,000 a year. Not even that, probably, maybe 50. But in that range. You don't get into teaching for the money. You really don't. If you get into the teaching just for the money, you're going to be sorely disappointed.
You get into it for the summers off.
And did you know this? A lot of people say, hey, you get the summers. You know what? If you look at the contract, the only 12-month employees or 52-week employees are staff. Main office staff and janitors.
Right.
52-week. Teachers are listed as 37-week employees. That's what you're listed as.
Yeah, but how does that affect you?
Well, that means a lot of teachers have to get a summer job.
Well, they don't have to. I mean, you know what you're getting paid. And teachers, in general, at least back in the day, made enough for a yearly salary. And certainly as you got older and worked more. I mean, teachers were in the suburbs, certainly, making a decent salary.
I knew a lot of suburban teachers when I was working as a teacher. And the majority, first of all, they line up to try to get a summer school job. Second, they try to get a coaching job for sports that can meet over the summer. So now you got the extra pay there. Or they get together and put together and run companies over the summer, cutting grass,
painting.
Painting, construction. Now, this is back in the day when your salary was paid out for those 37 weeks, so you didn't get a paycheck for the remaining weeks.
Yeah.
So that's what they had to do. Now, at least in Chicago, and I'm not sure about the suburbs, but in Chicago, they now stretch out your paycheck for the 52 weeks.
So they just divide it over the 52.
Right, so your paycheck each time is now a lower amount, but you get it all over the 52 weeks. So,
back in the day, you just had to plan a little better.
Exactly. You had to plan your money out over the summer if you chose not to work.
Yeah.
So...
All of that for, I don't know how we got into all of that.
Well, yeah.
Because of the Aaron Water Show.
Aaron
So the Theater on the Lake, Rod.
Yes.
So the Theater on the Lake is doing a little fundraiser through Chicago Social where they're going to cordon off an area of the Theater on the Lake for people to watch the Aaron Water Show.
Oh, that's nice.
And they're selling tickets.
Nice.
So I went ahead and bought tickets. So we're going to go, the Bubalas are going down to the Theater on the Lake tomorrow to try and watch the Aaron Water Show.
Where are you
going to
park?
That's a really good question, Roger. Colleen and I debated that today. I'm not exactly sure because I have a car down here and kids will drive down in the morning when they get up.
Okay.
And so we're thinking that we're going to take the bus from Michigan Avenue up to the zoo.
Okay.
The 151.
All right.
Will that work?
Well, why don't you divvy it?
Rent 6 divvy bikes and ride up there?
Why not?
Well, A, because I think there'll be a million people along the lakefront. And so that will be tough. B, I've got 4 kids plus me and Colleen. So somebody's crashing into somebody, and there's a lawsuit involved in there somehow.
Oh, okay.
Against us, not for us.
Are you saying you're dangerous riders?
Well, I, out of the six of us, yes, somebody's going down. There's no doubt about that. So I don't think that's our best idea. Now, okay. I just wanted to get a cab. You know, there's plenty of cabs that are vans. Let's just jump in a van cab and head up as far as we can go and then walk.
Okay.
And Colleen says, let's just take the bus. Why are we not taking public transportation?
Sure.
I'm like, I don't know. So I looked online, and it looked like the 151, I think, comes right here on Michigan Avenue. I should be able to see from outside. There's a bus stop
coming
right
from
there.
The zoo? Yeah, the 151 comes down Michigan.
And then it goes up to Lincoln Park Zoo.
Yeah.
And it's only like 22 minutes.
And wait, 151's the Sheridan, right?
I don't know, Rich.
Yeah. 151 goes all the way up north.
Okay. Well, I don't want to go that far.
Well, all right. So, just get off of the zoo.
The 151.
Mm-hmm.
So I can grab it, I think, here on Michigan Avenue and then get off at Lincoln Park Zoo.
Yep.
And then we're just right across the way from the Theater on the Lake, I believe.
From the still got a healthy walk. It's on the other side.
Yeah, but you go underneath Lakeshore Drive and you're there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the zoo is almost on the lake. It's just right across Lakeshore Drive, right?
Right.
So that's what we're thinking. Now, we could have just, I thought, well, maybe we'll just go park at the zoo and pay zoo parking. But the zoo people are smart.
Mm-hmm.
Because for this weekend... To park at the zoo?
Yeah.
$50.
Oh, baby.
Yeah. Oof. So if you were planning on heading to Lincoln Park Zoo today and hadn't realized it's Air and Water Show weekend, be aware. Parking at the zoo this weekend, 50 schmackaroonies.
Surge pricing.
Surge pricing indeed. All right, quick break in the news next, 720 WGN. Hello, everybody. Matt Bubala with you for another 23 minutes on WGN Radio. We're live in the Allstate Showcase studio here in the Trib Tower. We're in the Showcase. Roger's up on the 7th floor. Jess Raines is here behind the glass, hanging out until Max and O take over at 5 a.m. We're hoping to touch base in a couple of minutes with Julia McFarlane. She is a BBC reporter in front of the show. Talk to her a little bit about... about our week here and how they're looking at it overseas. We had a very interesting week here that we just have not touched on much here, Roger. But I did tease earlier.
Okay.
I did tease earlier. And I do. some shows you come in fired up and you want to do it all. And sometimes you're just like, you know what? Quite honestly, I was thinking this week, Twin Peaks has been a saving grace for me. Honest to God, Raj, I can get away from the world for an hour every Sunday and not think about all the insanity that's going on, and it's just been awesome. And there's only 4 episodes left, and it's killing me.
Well, then you get to watch everything from the old series through the new series after that. You'll go back, you'll start with the old series again, and just keep watching through the new series. That'll take how many episodes?
I'll just watch the new one again. Honestly, I'll go back to the old one.
Fine.
The new one is so good. I will go back to it. But it's been a saving grace. But just this week. Anyways, I teased earlier that a friend of mine today was, she tweeted me about Bannon resigning,
right,
being fired, whatever happened, and said, you know, she really thinks that Trump's not going to, he's going to figure out a way out.
No.
And I said, no. Here's my reasoning. Because I don't think he's loving the job. I don't think he's liking the job. I do think he'd rather not be doing the job. However, right now, with what happened in Charlottesville and all the mounting pressure and Republicans turning against him somewhat, et cetera, I think that is not a way he would ever resign. If the Russia thing got too crazy and he thought there was going to be some problems there, maybe he'd resign. But something like this, where Republicans are turning against him, to me, that means he'll and people start calling for his resignation. To me, that's where he digs his heels in and says, no way I'm going.
Yeah.
I'm not going like that.
It's just not his nature.
Now,
when someone says he's going to or not going to do something, it is his nature to do the complete opposite.
Well, everything has to be on his own terms.
Of course.
That's for sure. And no matter what, if somehow someday he does resign, he will make it look like, because he has accomplished everything he wanted to, he changed the economy, he would go out singing about the unemployment rate and the Dow and the this and the that and this stupid mainstream media. I'm just tired of dealing with them. I've accomplished what I needed to. America's in a better place, and I'm going to go back to running my business because, he'd make it look like he just, achieved everything in the world for sure.
Yeah.
But here's the other thing.
Yeah.
There will never be enough pressure on him to resign because Democrats do not want him to resign.
Because?
Because why would you want to give Mike Pence 2 years to run a normal presidency to go into a reelection? It is by far in the Democrats' best interest right now to keep Trump doing exactly what he's doing going into these midterms a year from now. There is no reason for them to want him out at all. Even if, and he's not broken any laws that we know of, right? This whole Charlottesville thing was blunder after blunder after blunder. And certainly I don't think the moral leadership that we would like out of a president, at least for 80% of Americans. However, that's just not knowing how to do the job right. And for Democrats, it's the biggest gift he could give them. He is giving them a big opportunity to take advantage going into these elections. And if he got run out of office now, there'd be a lot of time for Mike Pence to right the ship, to automatically look like so much better, so much more presidential, so much better of a leader and smart politician, and start getting an agenda pushed through. All of those things would happen. And that's the worst case scenario for Democrats. And for so many very progressive Democrats, Mike Pence is a way worse person to have in office. Very, you know, not friendly to the LGBT community. I mean, all sorts of things, the women's reproductive rights. He is not the guy that they want in office. Trump is much more the person they want in office, A, because quite honestly, he was a Democrat till not that long ago. And B, he's not really getting anything done. And misfire after misfire on the publicity front makes it really good for them to have a better shot of winning some elections come the midterms. So in my mind, you know, you're never going to hear Dick Durbin start calling for his resignation. You're never going to hear Tammy Duckworth or any of the big Democrats start calling for his resignation because it's not in their interest as a Democratic Party. Unless he really does something insane with North Korea or something big comes out of this Russia investigation, there is no way he's getting pushed out. It would only be on his own accord. That's my two cents. Hey, speaking of two cents, Julia McFarlane, our friend from the BBC, is on the phone right now. Hey, Julia, good morning.
Hey, Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great. I was just going on a rant about how Donald Trump will never resign from this office. Is anybody over there thinking in this, with this crazy week we had here, is anybody overseas saying, you know what, I bet he's going to end up stepping down or they're going to force him out?
You know, we're all beginners in the crazy train of American politics now more than ever. But what happens, what's happening is that we're paying attention to the, to what's happening in the White House more than we ever have in the past, even when we were, you know, both fighting the same war in the Middle East 10 years ago. It seems that national bulletins are very often not leading on national stories, but leading with developments in Washington. But what it's tricky because, you know, there will be a day of crazy headlines and, you know, whether it's something to do with the Russia investigation or whether it is, you know, fallout from the protests and what happened last weekend. We always think, is this the end? Is this it? And yet somehow in a couple of days late, a couple of days later, we're talking about something else. And it seems that this president has a remarkable staying power for now. So, you know, is there going to be a straw that breaks the camel's back? I don't think anyone here really knows what that might be, because, you know, with every week we're, you know, there's something that takes us by surprise. And, you know, very often rules are broken that conventional wisdom would have said that would have toppled any presidency. And yet Donald Trump remains storming forward. So who knows?
Yeah. Well, I would tell you, Julie, I was just saying before you got on the phone that he's not going to leave office unless he decides of his own accord. He hasn't broken any real laws that they could convict him of to push him out. He could be shamed out of office, you might say, but he's not the type who will cave to that type of pressure, that's for sure. And while he has just done everything that a president would never do in our history, for the most part, as far as the way you lead this country, none of that is going to get him pushed out of office. And as I was saying, I think the biggest thing is Democrats, the other side, they want him to stay in office because it's giving the Democratic Party a real opportunity moving into our next midterm elections to run against Donald Trump and everything that's changed in America or the way things are going. Him, if he left office, that would be not good for the Democratic Party right now. It's too far away from elections. And Mike Pence, his vice president, who would take over, is way more conservative and is way more of a politician, meaning he would get stuff pushed through. They would probably repeal and replace Obamacare, which was a huge issue here. They would pass all the progressive movements of the last 8 years, gay marriage and things like that. Mike Pence would be very much against women's reproductive rights. They would start rolling back a ton of stuff if he became president. So the Democrats need Donald Trump to stay in, keep making a fool of himself, for lack of a better term, in a lot of ways, in America's eyes and national eyes, so that they can run against that when the next elections come around. So he's not going anywhere for the time being, unless he decides, I've had enough of this.
You say that. Yeah, I mean, you say this, but I'm reminded of one of my favorite SNL sketches that I saw when Kate McKinnon was playing Hillary. And there is a line where she, as Hillary, says, "No, he's got to win. I'm counting on it," referring to Donald Trump. And the joke was, because obviously, you know, Hillary was in it for the long haul, and the candidate she would have wanted to go up against was Donald Trump, because she would have steamrolled him. That was, you know, that again, that was conventional wisdom. So, you know, who knows? But you know, honestly, like, we can try and understand and we can try and predict. And very often in the last few years, all of our predictions have gone out the window. But the question that I am particularly interested in, really, is what does Donald Trump want? I mean, has he wanted to ascend to the White House for itself? Has he wanted to be president because he's wanted to be president? Or does he want to be president because he sees it as a means to an end? And if so, what is that end? You know, what is the Trump ideology? He, throughout his years, has swung across the political spectrum. He's donated to the Clintons. He was quite Democrat at some point. And then he, you know, almost disavowed the Republicans if they weren't going to choose him as their candidate. I don't really know what he wants or what he believes in. He has a lot of strong talk. But there will be things that which you wonder whether he says it because that is what pumps up his base for the moment. You know, he's very anti-immigration, and yet he has an immigrant wife, you know, and he's also got family from Scotland and, you know, all sorts of things that don't really tend to make sense if you're looking at what he says and trying to balance them against long running views that he seems to have. So would Donald Trump ever step down? I think if it were a case of him stepping down rather than being removed from office, I would guess my own unqualified view would be that it would be because what he wants is no longer in the White House. And then to that end, I want to know, what is it that he wants?
Well,
really,
and I don't know that we can answer that, but I would say, what he wants is no longer in the White House. I don't think, Julie, that he truly, truly, truly really wanted to be president. I think he wanted to run for president. The one thing that we have seemed to have seen from Donald Trump for many years now is that he loves praise, and he loves being able to tell people and being told how good he is and how great things he's done. I mean, look at how he handled Charlottesville. He right away goes into how great things are in America in his first press conference about this. I mean, it always turns back to those things. And I don't think he truly ever wanted to be president. I think his whole running for president was a big middle finger to Barack Obama, who made fun of him at a press dinner years ago. And it seemed like that's where so much of Donald Trump's policies seem to be just to hurt Barack Obama and go against whatever Barack Obama had going. I mean, he really has a thing for Barack Obama and did for the 8 years of office. And I think he ran somewhat on a lark because people said, you'd make a great president. And if somebody tells him that, he's going to believe it. And he thought this would be, you know, I should do this or that. I don't think he really thought he was going to win. And now that he's there, I think he's not enjoying it and not having fun because it's not like running his Trump organization. He can't, you know, with the checks and balances and Congress and everything else, he can't get the things done he wants to get done. I think it's suffocating. Yeah. And I think that if he ever does decide to step down, it will be at some point when he decides I can claim victory. I came in, I turned around the stock market, I turned around the economy, I secured the borders, I've done what I needed to do, and now I leave it to blah, 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 blah. And I think what it will happen, my best guess would be he won't run for re-election. He will finish his 4 years. I will bet you $1,000 right now he does not run for re-election or stand for re-election because he is not going to want another 4 years of what you have to go through as president. I just don't think his heart is that much into it. I think there's too much else he enjoys in life and enjoys doing that you just don't get to do when you're the president.
No, of course, that sounds perfectly plausible to me. That's another more than 3 years away, so I guess we'll just have to see.
How is it still 3 years away? How is it still 3 years away? This is crazy. It's like we just had 10 years of a presidency in 6 months.
Yeah, we've had 10 years of a news cycle in the last
We have. Hey, I know you got to get going and I have to get going too. Let me ask you one question, though. We had somebody on the show earlier tonight here in Illinois who is part of a website. So we have a governor race here in Illinois coming up next year.
All right.
And we have all these men. So we have a Republican governor and we have all these, I think we have now 8 men vying for the primary for the Democrats and no women running in Illinois for governor. And so it's a
I was just about to ask that. When you said 8 men, is there any women?
No women running.
8 men, yeah.
So some of my political women friends here in Illinois started a website, like, are women running for governor in Illinois? And it's a big no and how we need to get women involved and things like that. And so Politico did a big, project here talking about women in office nationally nationally for us, women represent 20% of our Congress, 25% of state legislature seats, 12% of governorships, 24% of statewide elected offices like our attorney general, lieutenant governor, et cetera, et cetera. Women do not represent well at all as they should here in our government. How is it over there in the UK? Is this I'm wondering if this is a worldwide issue or if it's different in America than it is in other places.
I think our parliament has a higher proportion of women in MPs. I believe it's at an all-time high at the moment. I know that the opposition leader, Jeremy Corbyn, he's made quite a big thing of wanting to have a gender-balanced shadow cabinet. He has a lot of female senior Labour MPs in his shadow cabinet. But I would say that it's not just across politics. It's the media, it's science, particularly science, the world of engineering, the world of tech, that women are really underrepresented. Mm. I'm not sure exactly why that is. I think a lot of time women are held back. I think that's absolutely true. I think often when there are men in senior positions, when they are looking to hire a space, there is an unconscious bias where a lot of people tend to want to hire people similar to themselves. And many times it's not consciously done, but it's something that we should be aware of. But I think whenever we have these conversations, I think the dangerous side of this is that we ignore the fact that a lot of women do choose to have, you know, to pursue family life. And that is an important part of the gender balance question, because there are trends that more women tend to bring up children. And that should not be an excuse at all. But as when we come to issues of diversity, whether it's ethnic diversity or whether it's gender diversity, I'm very much of the opinion that quotas and sort of shoving people into slots in order to make up a balance is not the right way to tackle this. It's more about the attitudes that you need to tackle. You need to understand that women are just as capable as men. And what I would like to see is to have no barriers So rather than having sort of quota filling strategies, take away the barriers so that the best candidate for the job gets the job, regardless of who they are, regardless of their background, of their race, of their sexuality. And I think that's the best way we can move forward, rather than fixating on numbers.
Yeah, well, that's the ideal. How we get there is the other question. I'm out of time. I know you've got to get back to work. Julia McFarlane, follow her on Twitter at Julia McFarlane. She works for the BBC. Let's check in again soon. Okay, Julia?
Thanks, Matt. Nice to speak to you. Talk to you soon.
Thank you so much for jumping on the phone. Our friend Julia McFarlane at the BBC. Very good follow on Twitter for international news at Julia McFarlane on the BBC. All right, Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN.